The Jockey Talk 360 Jockey of the Week is sponsored by FoundationDetox.com, America's number one equine toxin remover. And it was a big weekend at Parks and an enormous weekend and really a career-defining victory for one rider in particular. Of course, I'm speaking of Sophie Doyle.
Sophie Doyle in the Grade 1 Cotillion for the three-year-old fillies. This was a beautiful ride on Street Band, especially when you consider the way the race shaped up. They went crazy fast early on. Sophie Doyle did not panic. Waited toward the back of the pack, came with this big wide bid in that red cap. At this point, if you were backing her like I happen to be, got lucky, you're feeling pretty good because everybody else is starting to feel the effects of that invigorating pace.
But it was an impressive move by horse and a confident ride by Sophie Doyle. Let's listen to the stretch of the Cotillion as Sophie Doyle brings home her first career Grade 1 victory.
They're coming down to the final furlong. Garana, here comes Straight Band on the outside. And Straight Band has come from far back to take the lead. Garana now second, but Straight Band is beginning to move away. And this will be a signature moment for Straight Band. She's 7-1, and she's got it. Straight Band wins the Cotillion just over 2 at the end. Garana was second, and then Horologist and Bellafina.
It was a Grade 1 victory at the highest level of our game and a brilliant ride against some of the best the sport has to offer.
And a win and you're in for the Breeders' Cup distaff. So hopefully we'll see the connections just here in a few weeks out at Santa Anita.
Sophie Doyle, it was an easy choice this week. You are our Jockey Talk 360 Jockey of the Week. For your horse to bounce back quicker, remove the toxins in their body. Add Foundation Detox to their diet. Order now at FoundationDetox.com, where a portion of the proceeds will benefit the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund.
You're listening to the Thoroughbred Post on the Equisport Radio Network. Brought to you by Ballyrose Farm, Dunhill Real Estate, and Racetrack Supply. Join our guests Sophie Doyle, Marianne Aligood, Tammy Gant, Crystal Fernung, and Kim Ware. And now from Ballyrose Farm, here's our host Les Saltzman.
Good morning and welcome to the show. And Sophie, I guess you remember that race.
Yes, I do very well indeed. It was a pretty spectacular moment in my career.
You know, I think you and I have been chatting back and forth the last week or so, and I guess it's almost 10 years. How long have you been in the United States now?
Just over 7 years now.
Yeah, so about 9 or 10 years ago, I first noticed you riding in England. And I said to my wife at that time, I said, this woman needs to be here in the United States. We've been watching you ever since. And it's great to have you on the show because I enjoy your riding style. And I know you come from a racing family. And mom did some eventing as well, right? Am I correct?
Yeah. My mom was she rode some eventers. And she actually rode as an amateur on the point-to-point, which she did the steeplechase back home in England, and then she trained for 25 years. And then after that, she became an agent for the next about 7 or 8 years before she retired.
No, the reason I brought that up was when you look at your style of riding, mm-hmm. you don't appear to be riding the same as most of the English or European riders. And I'm wondering if some of that point-to-point or eventing kind of positioning has some effect to it.
It definitely does. I was brought up around with the show ponies, and my mom had me riding racehorses when I was 11 years old. And still when we were on top of the racehorses, she didn't quite let us ride straight away like jockeys. We had to ride them properly and learn how to feel the horse and how to connect with the horse the right way and have a good understanding of how to ride them. So then when we came to running races, it became very natural.
No, and that's very apparent when you're watching you. You're very balanced, and you're light on the mouth, and it's nice to see. So you come from a racing family. You mentioned mom, who I got a kick the other day. I was doing some research for the show, and I came across her LinkedIn page, and she highlights her career, and then she writes that she's the mother of on there. Yeah. She's proud of both of you and your brother. Tell us about growing up as potential riders.
Yes, when we were young, we had show ponies when we were very young. And then my mom had us riding the racehorses from the age of about 11, 12 years old. And we were let loose on top of the gallops, riding very fast horses with very light weights on their back. And of course, people used to be watching out for us coming up the gallop on the big racehorses. But, you know, it did us in good stead to learn how to control these big animals and how to ride them and understand pace.
And you grew up in Lambourne, right?
Yeah, we grew up in Lambourne when I was, for about 24 years I was in Lambourne before I moved away and started traveling a little bit more.
So you were on those gallops from, I guess, as you said, from the time you were a kid. Now, is James younger than you or older?
James is actually 18 months younger than I am.
And growing up, were you a tough big sister or a little, you know, kind of easy on him? Or?
No, I was definitely the tough big sister. He didn't have much choice in that one. I was the one who was in charge until he got a little bit bigger than I am. And then I think the roles reversed a little bit then.
And he's still in England. Well, let me take a step back. What brought you over here?
For me, coming over to America, I had already been traveling around. I'd been out to Dubai a couple of times, racing out there. Then I was also in America for 2 winters. And I just decided that I think it would be a good option to come over here. There's plenty of opportunity. There's lots of racing over here. And especially on race days here, you have no less than 9 to 10 races on a card. So I figured that would equal a lot more opportunity for myself. And especially being in like Kentucky, where you had 6 racetracks around that would continue your racing 7 days a week almost.
And you started out, I guess, when you came over to just kind of touch the waters, you were in California for a while and then went to Kentucky. And now you're riding in Texas. How did you get there?
Well, this past year with the pandemic going on with COVID, I ended up moving around last year. And because Arlington didn't open up right away, I ended up having to kind of shift tracks and go where I needed to be and where I could pick up business. And I ended up riding at Prairie Meadows last summer. And I was doing that 4 days a week, then driving to Indiana to ride 3 days a week. In between, I was driving back to Kentucky to keep business going down there. So I was riding a few times at Churchill when I could. And then this past winter, I decided to stay up in Iowa when we had to make a decision where to keep our business going. So I stayed there, and then I went to Remington for an owner called Danny Caldwell. I picked up a lot of business. We finished 4th in the standings up there, which was really good. And then ended up coming down here to Texas and Sam Houston.
And it seems like you're riding quite a bit right now. Things are going pretty well. I think you won a couple of races in the last few days.
Mm-hmm.
Congratulations.
Yeah, we have them. Thank you.
Has it been difficult transitioning over the last 7 or 8 years to living here in the United States? Our racing calendar is so different. And has it been tough for you?
Not really. Honestly, I've really enjoyed it. For myself, I'm a bit of a workaholic, so
it
I don't mind being busy all the time.
Our guest that's going to be following you, Marianne Alligood, was a rider back in the 80s and early 90s. And in those days, it was very, very common for a rider to ride here for 3 or 4 days, get in the car, ride somewhere else at night, back to the racetrack in the morning. And it seems like you would feed on right on into that schedule.
Yes, that would definitely be me. Even right now, I'm actually whole walking my horse, Jazz. I just had him on the walking wheel exercising by himself in the morning. So I'm just calling him out. And everyone's always looking at me saying, "Do you ever go home?" Like, you're the only jockey on the backside that's here until 12 or 1 o'clock. and then back again in the afternoon to take care of him again. And they'll say, do you not ride enough horses in the morning and afternoon that you need an extra one? And I don't. I love riding my horse, Jazz, and having the extra time to take care of him. And I find it's better than just sitting at home and twiddling your thumbs waiting for the morning, from morning work to the races.
Well, tell me about your horse that you have there.
My horse is called Jazz and Tap. And Jazz and Tap and I won, he won my first ever race here in America for me. And then we went on to win two more races together. And then 18 months later, I ended up asking to have him. So he's now become my show pony, who does show jumping, dressage, cross country. He can pony on the track if he needs to. He's kind of a good all-rounder, but we've recently been getting more into the show jumping because he's really shown that that's what his potential is now that he's not racing anymore. And we're really excited for this summer. But we've got quite a few show jumping events to go to. So in between racing, I'll be going show jumping on the off days as much as I can.
Now, where will you go for the summer?
This summer, I'm going to be heading back up to Prairie Meadows in Iowa again. They race 4 days a week from Friday to Monday. So then it gives me a couple of extra days off to take care of him. And I've actually found a place that's got shows going on those days off. So I'll be keeping pretty busy from morning to night.
And it seems like you never get tired of being around the horses.
Never. Truly and honestly, I might be a jockey, but it's all about the horses for me. I'm just a girl who loves her horses. Always have them. Ever since I was pretty much born and raised with them. And I'm sure my whole life will be the same way.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, I think when a jock is involved with horses on a personal level, this is going to sound kind of corny, right? On a personal level, rather than just going to the yard and jumping on and getting off, when they're riding, they're more attuned to the animal. And I think over the years, I've noticed that riders that spend time with their horses seem to understand what's going to happen next with that horse when they're in a race.
Yeah,
do you agree with that?
They do, definitely. Yeah, I do 100%. I actually, when I ride for a trainer that I get on a lot of their horses all the time for, then when it comes to riding races, it becomes very easy. You understand each horse you're getting on. You know their traits. You know their moves. The moments in the races when they want to like to make their move, horses that want to be closer with the pace, or horses that want to be off the pace and make that closing run. It's very helpful to understand each and every horse individually, rather than just getting on a horse at the last sort of what was first time in 2 minutes and figuring everything out in that short space of time. It's nice to be able to get on them and know them.
That's why I mentioned Lamborn earlier, because there you got on horses every morning and you rode out and you got to know the horses, because it took a lot longer to get to the gallops and get back. And I think that's important.
Yes, it is, definitely. I enjoy that. One part I do miss is having that much time on a horse, is like the riding up to the gallops, working them, and then you've got to walk two miles home before you get back and take care of them back at the stables, and then you get back on again with the next one. Same with my horse, Jazz. I always try to take the long way to the track. And after we're done working on the track doing our flat work, I'll probably be riding around the outside of the barn for about another 30 minutes, just so they get to enjoy it before being outside of the stable and have a good life.
Well, you know, I think it gives them a good life, and it gives us a good life when you know we can spend the time with them like that. Tell me something. What else do you do? Because you're obviously obsessed with horses, but what else goes on in Sophie's life?
What else goes on? I like going hiking. If I can find some good hiking trails, you'll find myself and my dog Sandy will be going hiking all the time. we'll be going and doing things like that, or we can do. And then apart from that, it's all just horses for me.
Okay.
That's what I spend most of my time doing.
Well, and that's probably why you're doing so well. You know, I think the fact that you're so attuned to what you're doing, and again, it's kind of great to hear somebody, a younger rider, be so tied into their horses. We try and spend some time with jockeys all the time, and you know, it's so different to hear one person's opinion and the next. But it seems like you've really got it together, and I appreciate you spending time with us on the show today.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate you having us on. It's nice to be able to share with the rest of the racing world what another jockey does for the day and their days off and during the races.
The woman that's coming on behind you is a woman that rode for me back in the mid to early 80s, before you were born, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she also had that same kind of attitude and won a lot of races for us and did a great job. Her name is Marianne Alligood. We'll be sending you a link to the show, and you might enjoy listening to her. It was fortunate when I was training, I actually had 13 woman riders win for me.
Wow,
and Mary,
that's brilliant.
Yeah, and Marianne was one of my favorites. So we're thrilled to have her on. We're thrilled to have you with us. And hopefully we get to chat with you again in the future.
Yes, definitely. I'd love to be back on again. That's fantastic.
We'll be keeping an eye out for you. And we're just going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Marianne Alligood.
They are superstar athletes, but they don't ask for more money or go on strike. They bring their best every time they play. They are great thoroughbreds, retired at Old Friends.
And here's commentator turning for home in the Whitney with a three-length lead. And here's commentator to win the Whitney again. And boy, he did it with some front-running style today.
All commentator wants is a peppermint and to hang out with a couple of his pals, like Eclipse Award winners Hidden Lake and Sunshine Forever, or even a Breeders' Cup champ.
Prize the surging Sierra Roberto toward the inside. A driving finish in the turf. And here's the wire. And it is prized.
Many of the past superstars of our sport are still running around. So come visit them at Old Friends in Georgetown, Kentucky, or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Well, now we're on with one of my buddies, one of the people that kind of helped me survive in the racing business for many years. The one and only Marianne Alligood. Welcome to the show, Marianne.
So kind. Hello, how are you?
Good. How about yourself?
I'm good. I'm good. I'm trying to survive the winter up here. I'm not a cold fan of the cold.
You know, we actually were planning to go up to Atlantic City in Philadelphia, and we looked at the weather report, and we said...
maybe not.
Cold weather wusses are we. No, that ain't happening.
When you get used to the warm weather, you don't ever want to get cold again.
You know, between the warm weather and the old body, it's tough.
There you go.
So it's been a while since we've chatted, and you know, we had Sophie Doyle on just a couple of minutes ago. I didn't know if you had a chance to listen. She kind of reminds me of you. Yeah, because she's so ultra focused, and when you were riding, you were very, very focused, and I think that was one of the reasons why you were so successful.
Okay,
a couple of minutes, you were focused today, you know. But how'd you get started riding, Marianne?
I went to school for photography. I just happened to notice a female rider at, it was Keystone Racetrack at the time.
Right.
I said, I want to do that. Come to find out that a friend of mine that lived in the neighborhood parked cars there, and I met Bobby Burke, who trained and parked cars there. And that's how I started. I started walking hots, groomed for a while, ponied, galloped, and Mr. Mbazy gave me my first mount.
And that's a tough guy to ride for.
Oh, I came to learn that. Yes, indeed.
So your first mount was when? What year?
82.
So 82. And that's when women were just getting started in the
Rochelle Delta. Lee was around at the time.
Right.
I want to be like Rochelle Lee.
Well, it was probably just the two of you in the girls' jocks room at the time, right?
Yeah, for a very long time.
And then people like Kathy Ryan and Gwen Jackson and others got
Sydney Underwood.
Yep, Sydney was there. And
a lot of visiting riders.
Yeah, and for a while it was the place where a girl rider could get started.
I didn't know that. Until I was 22 years old. So I didn't know anything about the racetrack. I just said, wow, I think I'd like to do what Shelley's doing. So
I didn't realize that you were 21 or 22 when you got started. I always thought you were younger.
Yeah. No. I promised my mom I'd go to school first. So that's what happened.
So you got started, and obviously, it wasn't easy.
No, but I was very fortunate to be around people that allowed me to learn on the racetrack rather than send you off to a farm and learn how to gallop. I think when that happens, as soon as you come to the racetrack, you're going to learn all over again because it is two different worlds. So that was good for me. I liked doing it that way.
And you got on your first horse in the race for Joe, and tell us a little bit about how it progressed from there.
I actually rubbed horses for Joe for a while, and a gentleman that was teaching me how to gallop horses galloped horses for him. So one thing led into another, and that's how all that started.
And so now... Good.
I'm hearing myself when I talk, so I'm confused. I'm sorry. It's like coming back in the phone.
Oh, you're getting feedback. Okay. You're doing fine. So when you were with Joe, and then you got an agent after that, I guess?
No.
Long
time. Well, I shouldn't say a long time. I was at the mental... He was training at the Meadowlands. That's where I rode my first race.
Okay.
And then from there, came back to Keystone. And I had my first eight. I still had 10-pound bug, yeah. So I'm an old person now. I'm trying to think back.
If you're an old person, I'm a very old person. So
that was a long time ago.
And then you had... I guess, was it Al DeLapp that was your agent?
One of them, yeah.
Yeah.
The Tricky Dick, Al DeLapp. Shelly Lopez's...
Ray?
Ray, yeah, I had Ray Lopez. A few of them down the line. Oh, I had Danny Malou. They all did well for me.
Actually, I saw Danny about a few months ago. At Gulfstream, he's still
That's where he's at. Yeah.
Yep.
He always does well.
Yeah. He's an excellent agent, and Al was a good agent for you, and Ray was a good agent. You were fortunate. You had good guys.
I was very fortunate. Yes, I was.
Although I got to tell you, between the three of them, they spun me like a top a few times. But
that's makes a good agent. As long as you're not mad about it, they got to do what they got to do, right?
No, they've got to make sure you're on something live. When we say, for the audience, when we say we got spun, an agent will give you a call or say that, oh, we're opening a spot, and you think that you've got a rider, and then you go to enter, and you get the overnight and somebody else is on your horse. In Mary Ann's case, and it's kind of interesting in those days, because typically if you weren't going to ride the horse for me, Rochelle seemed to always be open, or vice versa. So I was always pretty lucky with the two of you.
Yeah, we seemed to do that a lot back in the day.
Yeah. So now what are you doing now?
I'm living the dream. I'm retired. I do some woodworking and some photography, and I just one day at a time.
And then tell us a little bit about your photography.
Oh, I have stuff hanging all over my walls. It's a personal thing.
Okay, so not something professional.
No. I dabble in a lot of things, but I'm not, like, professional in any one of them.
Well, it's the best way to be.
Just try to keep happy.
Well, these days, that's a great thing.
And busy, because you can't go out anymore, so. And there's always something to do around the house, so we're busy.
And you're living in Pennsylvania still?
No, I live in Marlton, New Jersey.
Okay, right over the bridge.
Yeah, I guess I ended up here because Garden State Park opened up. It was closer to there because I was riding Keystone and Philly Park. And I was also riding Garden State, so.
And that's turned into a shopping
center. So it was close. I'm sorry, I got interrupted. It was closer for me after I was finished night racing to live where I do now. Then to travel all the way back and forth from Philly.
Because
we were doing double duty back in the time, remember?
Well,
we
rode
two racetracks at a time.
We were talking to Sophie Doyle about that because she'll ride 4 days in one track and then drive 150 miles to ride another track for 3 days. And I made a point to say that back in the day, you guys would start at one place in the morning galloping, race in the afternoon, get in the car, get
drive an hour and a half.
Miles, yep.
Yeah.
And then
drive
back all over again. Matter of fact, I remember a couple of times that riders that were riding for me in those days, you know, we'd race at Monmouth or at Philly Park and then at Atlantic City.
Go down to Atlantic City, yeah.
Yep. My back
and that was a two-hour drive, wasn't it?
Two and a half hour drive. Brutal. And Penn National was even the bigger killer. But the back.
Oh, I never went to Penn. I'm sorry, Les.
I
didn't ride for you at Penn, did I?
No.
That was
never a question.
I'm sorry. Well, you know what? I'm sorry. I'm getting feedback, but I never went to Penn because if you really didn't want to ride me after I had a 2.5 hour drive.
I wouldn't want to be in the car with you
at nighttime. Oh, I'd be sleeping, so you'd have no problem there.
Well, that's what I was saying. The back seat of my truck in those days had a pillow and a blanket for the jock.
Yeah. See how kind you are? You even drove them there.
That's the only way I could get somebody to ride for me.
That's not true, you know. That's not true.
But we had some great times, and Marianne, I appreciate you getting on the line with us today. And wish you all the best, and you and I have some great memories, pal.
Hey, listen, if the weather gets better, you should really consider coming up this way.
It's going to have to get a heck of a lot warmer, my dear.
But, yeah, there was a pun in there. I'm sure you caught it.
Yeah, maybe. But on that note, let's break for a commercial. Marianne, a pleasure having you.
Thank you so much, Les. You have a great
day.
Stay safe.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
When you head to a horse sale, either looking to buy or sell, you really don't know what's going to happen. In the blink of an eye, horses can leave the ring undersold or overpriced. But what if there was a better way to ensure a fair market price for both the buyer and seller? Here at The Stable, this fall, we're offering just that. We offer the ability to see your yearlings hard at work while giving you a better chance to make informed decisions that are calculated, not spur of the moment. We'll also provide in-depth commentary from our trainers, blacksmiths, and veterinarians on how each horse is progressing.
And we're back. This is Les Salzman on the Thoroughbred Post, and with us for this segment, two wonderful women in racing and in the thoroughbred industry, Tammy Gant, who has to be one of my favorite people. Crystal, you're one of my favorite people also, but Tammy's like my ultimate favorite person because she's my go-to person whenever I don't know anything.
Mine too.
And that's quite frequently.
Yeah, mine too, Les.
We welcome you both on the show. And Crystal, first of all, before we get started, my heartfelt condolences to you and Brent about John's passing.
Thank you.
I know he was a huge part of your life, and he was a great horseman.
Yeah, well, anytime that you leave a trail of horsemen behind you, that's always a good thing. He's, Brent followed him in first, and then his sister's boy, Scott, came in, worked for us for a while, and then ended up where he is now, in Shell Evans, running Shell Evans's place. And then John's son, Andrew, worked for Brent and I from the time he could drag a rake down the shed row, and stayed with us off and on, you know, through school, and then worked for us full time, and then got the opportunity to go be the sales coordinator for Eddie Woods, which we were thrilled for him, and he's thriving over there. So, yeah, it's a large family of horsemen for sure.
Well, it's a loss, but actually, kind of got you and Brent together. Am I correct? At Lassiter?
We were already married. We had been married a year.
Okay.
Yeah, and we came here, you know, for vacation. Brent had decided he needed to get a real job because he'd been working for Dan at the Kentucky farm. And we both got, quote, real jobs. We're miserable for a year. And then had saved up money, and John was down here by then, went on Dan's farm here in Florida. So we came down here for a vacation that first summer and stayed with John. And while we were here, we got offered jobs as grooms. And so we went home and packed up everything we had in the back of a pickup truck and moved to Florida.
And from there?
From there, we worked at Lassiter Farm until it closed, and went out on our own in 1989, formed Journeyman Bloodstock Services. We chose Journeyman because we figured we weren't apprentices anymore, so that's how we kind of came up with it, and was, you know, on our own for a long time, and then Brent took a general manager's job at Cloverleaf, what's now Woodford. Here he was there for 7 or 8 years, and I ran our two farms. And then when Cloverleaf moved their operation to Kentucky, we started another stallion operation. You know, Brent had been highly involved in the stallion operation at Lassiter Farm and Southland Farm. And so it was just kind of a natural for us. So we started out with, I think, 8 stallions, if I remember, when we started. And so it's just kind of, you know, rolled along and just kept going. So we've been very fortunate.
And you folks have always had a great eye for an emerging stallion. Could you tell us a few of the stallions that you guys have stood?
Well, we stood Wildcat Air through his whole career. We stood Pomeroy. We stood Awesome again, and Les, there's been so many of them. We had 14 at one time. So, and of course, now we have Kozon. Yeah, now we have Kozon, who's the leading sire in Florida. And the last I looked, like 7th, maybe something like that, nationally on the third crop sire list. And then last year we acquired St. Patrick's Day, who's a full brother to American Pharaoh. and his first foals are being delivered this year, and they're breathtakingly gorgeous. They're really good-looking foals. And then Chester Thomas with Allied Racing came to us around Christmas time, and he had decided to retire Mr. Money, who's a Golden Sense horse that made over $1 million when as a three-year-old when four grade three stakes in a row and just got beat a nose in the grade one Pennsylvania Derby. And he's being very well received here. He's doing really well. So we're really happy with the roster we have. We feel like it's really it really covers the gamut of, if you've got a mare here, we've got three really top quality, highly bred stallions that are wonderful physicals too. So we got you covered.
One of the great things about the three that you have, they're either commercial or race, breed to race type of stallions. So
oh,
just
yeah,
about
absolutely.
Anybody could use
them. It's amazing how many people who race are breeding, especially to Kozan. We've got a lot of trainers that are in South Florida who are breeding to him. And, he's obviously, they can run short, they can run long, they went on the grass, they went on the dirt. You know, he's a kind of physical horse. There's not really a limitation of what kind of physical mare you can breed him to. So he's doing really well, and we bred him to 181 mares last year, and at the end of the year, he had 164 of them in foal. So he's very prolific at his job.
And I'm sure you guys are busy right now.
Yeah, we're really busy. We've got, of course, Brett and I still do all the foaling. We've got, I think, 16 on the ground now. And we'll probably do around 50 before the year's over. Brent does all the training, so he's at OBS in the morning, plus, you know, herd management, vet, all that kind of stuff. The breeding shed still is open, and, you know, so it's a lot of paperwork. You're doing contracts, keeping up with the breeding shed cards, calling to make sure the mares are getting in foal, and, you know, like I said, foaling, and Brent and I still do it all, so... it's a busy time of year, but it's kind of what we've always done. We fall the mares together at Laster Farm, and we fall over 100 every year. So it's just kind of our way of life. We keep saying that this year's been like one long foaling season when you were quarantined on the farm and couldn't go anywhere.
Right. It seems like you're starting where you're stopping or stopping where you're starting. But in
yep,
the middle
pretty
of
much.
It all, and you and I talked the other day, and you said, well, you know, we're maybe back. You know, kind of slowing down a little, and you decided to donate something very special.
Yeah, in 2010,
and Tammy's been involved with that as well. So why don't you guys tell me a little bit about what you're doing?
Tammy's been my rock in all this, so I'll hand it over to her.
Thanks, Crystal. I do want to touch upon something Crystal mentioned shortly before you spoke to me here, which was one of the most, I felt, the epitome of what it was in foaling season during the lockdown was an incredible photo of a very large foal that Crystal had foaled out, and she's laying down next to her. She's next to it holding it, and she had on her mask. And that was the first photo that I'd ever seen of a foal with a person wearing the mask because of the pandemic. And it might be her normal foaling procedure, but it kind of blew me away. And so foalings continued through pandemic, and breedings continued, and that's a lot to speak of for the folks that breed, because that's a little extra that they added on to that as far as logistics of getting horses in and out. But during all of that, Crystal thought of this amazing thing, which was a horse named Clockwork Fury, which happens to be her initials, which was not realized till recently, the CWF. She's been very generous for many years with the Florida Thoroughbred Charities that I'm involved with, and Florida Thoroughbred Charities funds the Thoroughbred Retirement Farm Second Chances at the Lowell Correctional Institution here in this area in Central Florida. And then also we fund student education programs, scholarships, and the like. And so she's been actively involved. The year before, she, at one of the stallion shows, she did a big auction. And so she's always had this mind for how to connect the community, the business, the cultural side, and the equine side, but also how to help with charity. And so this donation that she's making of Clockwork Fury really is kind of like the epitome of all coming together. So I'll let her talk a little about Fury, because it's going to be hard for her to let him go, I think.
Well, we purchased him in 2010. Some wonderful ladies here in town are friends of both of us.
Crystal, let me just interject, because people in the audience probably are thinking, what kind of horse is this? We should tell them a little bit about what
we've done here in Ocala. We've done what we call a horse fever project, which is kind of like y'all did a little bit of it up in Kentucky, and it's art horse forms in fiberglass, and you commission artists to paint them, and you have an auction. And the first one in 2000 raised almost $1 million, and it started the Marion Cultural Alliance, which is really a big deal here in Central Florida now. And then they had another one in 2010, and Charlotte Weber was always a big supporter. We had had the auction out there under a big tent, and the local artist Mark Hirschberger had, when Brett and I went to this, we just went to go just to go to the auction and see it. We had no intentions of bidding on anything, but I saw this horse, and at first you see him and you think he's metal. And what Mark did was, he had bought this antique book about steampunk artists and stuff that they had designed, and you know, all over the centuries. And he went to bed that night, and he had this dream that he was in this like old European street, and it was wartime, and a horse went flying by him, and there was, I don't remember, it was a log or a wagon or something behind him that was on fire. So he woke up and he was like, I'm going to make him a war horse. So what he did was, instead of leaving the form solid, he cut it up. Anybody who's ever seen it thinks he's metal. He did such a good job. He put the forms back together, but on the inside, he's very steampunk. He's got gears and tools and chains and all kinds of stuff in him. And back then what he did was he had found a pair of antique German opera glasses, and they were his eyes. He had a star that was an LCD, whatever you call it, screen that powered his eyes so they'd glow at night. Back then, he had an iPod recording in him of horses hollering and gears going. And then he had, on his nose and back on his hips, he had little boxes that you would put dry ice in and he would steam. Well, I fell in love with him. And like Brent says, a bourbon or two later, we owned him. And we brought him home. And the crazy thing was, when Creech Horse Vans donated every year that we've done a horse fever auction, this is my first year being involved in the actual production of it, but when they delivered him, he stood on his cement pad out in front of the stallion barn, and the stallions were just like hollering and carrying on, and Wildcat Air was right across from him, and he wouldn't walk past him. He was just like, you had to back him up, and he wouldn't take his eyes off of him. And then they stood there for like 3 hours, and he had to stare down with this metal looking horse that he finally gave up. But people would drive in and think that there was a horse standing there. Then they'd realize, he's metal. And no, he's not metal. And we used to have a lot of tours through here from all over the world. And people, I can't tell you how many people have had photographs taken with him, and I've gotten pictures from him. And as the years went on, he started getting bluebirds that would nest in him. And he would have, I'd look out here like this time of year, and there'd be like bluebirds on his ears and sitting down his neck and sitting on his hips and all this stuff. And so last year, FTBOA had their gala. They had to cancel their gala in March. They had to cancel their big golf tournament, which is a big financial hit. Tammy did a great job of having an online auction that they did, you know, better than I think all of us were hoping for, because we were just feeling our way through that kind of stuff. And I just got to thinking, well, Clockwork Fury needed he needed Mark to come back and get him and fix a couple of things on him, because he'd been through three hurricanes. And just standing out there, but how well made he was still in one piece. So last March, Mark came and picked him up, and at the time, I was just going to get him fixed up and then see what I was going to do with him. And then Lori Zink, who was one of the originators of the Horse Fever auction, I approached her, and they were doing one for this year, for 2020, which is the anniversary, 20-year anniversary of the first one. So Tammy and I had toyed with having Clockwork Fury in the March gala, and then, you know, we didn't get to have it. And so I went to Lori and said, can we piggyback on this new 2020 Horse Fever event that you're doing? And she was gracious, like, yes, of course. And Mark was already fixing him up. So then I thought, okay, I've got to find a way to get him auctioned. So I went to OBS, talked to Todd Wojciechowski, and he talked to Tommy Ventura, and they passed it by the board, and everybody graciously agreed that we could do it. So he now has 2020 technology, and he has Mark's added crystals all through him. He has a crystal heart. He has a crystal brain. He has working fiber optics through him. Now he's got like this, what he calls a crash cart that rolls along with him. Instead of steam or instead of dry ice, you can actually power him with this to steam coming out of his nose and out of his hips. But you don't have to have electricity, because he's actually put in a hand crank generator that you can crank him up and make him work. But the one thing that really got me was when he came and got him, and I was like, I'm so sorry, he's full of bird's nests, and, you know, because he'd been outside. Mark took one of the nests and preserved it, made a mechanical bluebird, and it sits on him and works anytime there's, like, noise or it's touched or it starts chirping and it moves around. And he has done such an amazing job. This horse does so many things now, and he doesn't have to stay on a base. He's on like rollers on his feet, and he's very steampunk, very cool looking horse. So we're going to have him. He was at the OBS January sale in the lobby, and then we're going to take him back over there on March 11th. And he will be there in the lobby. Will be, you know, people be able to see him and everything. And then he will be auctioned as the last hip of the day on the first day of the sale, which is the 16th. So the last horse comes through. We'll bring Clockwork Fury in. We'll show all of his stuff that he does. And just last week, because we couldn't do the regular online bidding that both OBS and Keeneland and Fasic now have, just because it was just too logistically hard to make work. So this amazing group of committee members that I'm serving with come up with an idea to where we could let people register, and we were going to try and find them agents and all that kind of stuff. And then OBS, Todd Wojciechowski, I was talking to him one day, and he said, we'll do phone bidding for you. Like, really? Like, sure, we can do that for you. And so all they have to do, there's no pre-qualification ahead of time. You don't have to have a credit established or any of that kind of stuff. But if you go to the Horse Fever 2020 Facebook page, you'll see an event post there. And if you click on it, it'll take you, you read down through it, it'll take you to a little link where you can register to be able to bid online. And then what will happen is about 10 minutes, just like you did with us, about 10 minutes before the auction, one of the OBS officials will call you. You can watch the auction live on OBS's site, and you can bid. And it doesn't have to be from Ocala or from Florida. Creech and Horse Transportation and the Horse Fever Committee will assist at getting him delivered to anybody inside the United States that were to purchase him. Outside the United States, that's, you know, that's your cost, but Creech has graciously agreed to help us get him to his new owner, because he'd have to be crated and that kind of stuff.
They'll ship him in a box stall, am I correct?
Yep, they'll crate him up and ship him in a box stall. So, you know, it's, what, Lori, about five of us that are, or Tammy, that are on this committee, and the whole time we've been doing this, we've been doing the regular horse fever part of it, too.
Yeah, which is quite a roll through. Five people, but maybe hundreds in the workforce with all the wonderful events. And so horse fever for those
now, the proceeds are going to go where?
50% are going to go, okay, sorry, 50% are going to go to the Marion Cultural Alliance, which is the arts group that was originally funded through Horse Fever that gives grants to the community, and then 50% will actually go to Florida Thoroughbred Charities, of which majority, if not all of it, will go to the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation Farm in Lowell in Central Florida that helps the female inmates gain skills as they care for retired Thoroughbreds that have their lifelong homes there.
And amazingly, we have Kim Weir on the line as well.
Oh, good.
From the TRF.
Yeah, that's the Second Chances program is what I always want people to know, and Kim can tell you so much more. But this one fact, people just look at me, and I always tell them, of all the women that's gone through this program, and it's one that you have to apply to be able to be in, their recidivism rate is like 3%. I mean, it has saved so many women's lives, and in the process, horses along the way. And I know Kim's thrilled to be one of the people that's going to be taking this over, but she can tell you it's an absolutely amazing program.
Yeah, it was the first one in the country for female, you know, it's the only in the country for women, actually, not just the first. And like Crystal said, it's just had such a success when, you know, I hear stories from the women, because I actually ask them to tell me their impressions of meeting the horses when they first do, because they don't have horse experience, and then also what they learn. And to hear that one woman said, I had no reason to get up every day, but when I had to care for one of those horses and see what it meant to the horse for me to be there, she said, I had a reason to get up every day. And when you hear things like that, it's really life-changing. And so it's very easy to see why Crystal has been involved so long with the charity, and then also just finding those extra opportunities to not only fundraise, but to promote the mission of the charity. Because in the end, it gives back to all of us in society, and it gives back definitely to each and every one of those women each day they're out there with each of the horses.
And the thing that I think with Clockwork Fury is that it doesn't have to be just a purchase for a person, like, oh, I don't have any place to put something like that. The kids go crazy for this horse. I think he would make a really great addition to a children's museum or a children's hospital, or, you know, so if somebody had a philanthropic bent to them or heart, and they were looking for something to give to something like that, this would be a great gift.
What would be the best way for somebody to get a hold of you guys if they wanted more information?
They can call Journeyman's office, which will always go to my cell if I'm not in the office, and that's 352-629-1200. And, of course, Tammy can give her number, because she knows all about him as well.
Yeah, so they can call Crystal's number, Journeyman Stud, or the Florida Thoroughbred Breeders and Owners Association, which is at 352-629-2160. Again, 352-629-2160. And like Crystal said, just finding that right home for it. The horse is really quite amazing. It is one of a kind. So you hear of the cows in Chicago and the horses of Ocala, and all these different public art exhibits everywhere, but I will say for sure, no doubt, this horse is one of a kind, and he's steampunk, he's perfect for indoors or outdoors. just the stuff that he can do, the list of things from, you know, the blowing of the dry ice to the tick-tocking and sound. And he definitely touches all five senses. And we're hoping that he touches someone's heart and someone will bid. We'd love to see a six-figure bid on him this year. That's the goal.
Well, hopefully we get it. And the money is going to go to great use. And we appreciate both of you being on the show with us today. And we'll probably be underbidders on this one. But we'll be there rooting for you. And again, thanks for being on. We're going to go straight to Kim, who is going to, and Tammy and Crystal, you may not be aware of this, we're starting a new feature on the show each week, Heroes of the Herd. And Kim's going to highlight one of the horses or one of the people involved in the program during the segment each time it's on. So,
oh, good.
Kim, without further ado, why don't you tell us a little bit about our Hero of the Herd?
Well, I am delighted to be here, Les. Thank you so much. And Tammy and Crystal, it's nice to hop in at the end. You are amazing ambassadors for our mission and our herd yourselves. So Heroes of the Herd, you just heard from two of them for sure. But Les, I am thrilled to turn our attention from a really amazing steampunk artistic horse to a very, very sweet 23-year-old thoroughbred whose name is Glorious Gambler, and he lives at our TRF Second Chances program in Lowell. So he's our star of the day, and I'm thinking you probably did a little bit of homework on him. Did you read about him, Les?
I did.
Very good.
And he is, as you said, he is your working-class type of horse and probably has a great life because of this program that he almost definitely would not have any other way.
Well, he is. I love him. I'm looking at a picture of him, which I'll be able to tell your listeners how they can easily see this very sweet picture. It's like a head-on of him. And I was with him almost this exact time last year, Les, when we were together mm-hmm. at Lowell on March 6th there. I think this is when I took this picture of him. So he is 23 years old. He has been at Lowell. He really is a unique horse. That's why I picked him, because he's like, what do you want to call it? He's like a founding father of the TRF Second Chances program at Lowell. He arrived in December of 2001. And our program, he was there early. I'm not saying he was the first horse, because I wasn't around 20 years ago in this role, so I can't say that for sure. But 2001 was very early. This program was started in 2000. So he was definitely there early, and he's been there, you know, the whole time. So he had 1 year of racing. I'm looking at his equibase. He had a three-year-old year that was sort of, yeah, as you and I both called him, kind of a blue-collar three-year-old year. He ran nine times pretty steadily. He kind of ran once a month. He started in January, and he ran through August. He just sort of marched his way through the racing calendar. And in those nine starts, he had one first, which was very exciting for him, I'm sure, and all of his connections. And he won a $20,000. He collectively won $20,000. $20,076 was his career earnings. So, you know, he was a workhorse. He did his job, but he did not exactly light up the board. And he's been lighting up the board for 20 years at Lowell. but I loved looking at where he raced. Les, he raced at, you know, Fairgrounds and Sportsman's and Mountaineer. Now, can I quiz you as an expert in this sport and to ask you where Sportsman's is or was?
That one was in Illinois, and it's no longer there.
Okay. Well, you know, I know a lot of the smaller tracks because I think you and I have talked about the fact my husband is involved with the speed figure team, and when he started, he did all the tracks I had never heard of, but I still hadn't heard of Sportsman. So I think it's just because it's been gone.
Tammy and I kid around because we've been to more tracks that no longer exist over the years.
Oh, please, Les, don't tell my claim to fame there.
That's how you become historians of the sport, you two. That's very, very good.
That is true. That is true.
Well, Tammy, you've been to Lowell so many times. I'm not that you were prepared for this, but do you have anything you want to offer about our Glorious Gambler, like as a personality? Do you have any connection to him? Does he ring well, a bell
yeah,
for you?
Well, yeah, you know, he's one of the ones that, you know, what happens is the women throughout the years, because you have about 15 each session that goes through the program, and each time the women kind of pass along the what I've learned from this horse experience or one of their favorites. And so this is one of those horses, like you said, a workman horse, so the other women will tell stories of him that they hand to the next generation of women. And so some look forward to handling certain horses, and they don't look forward to others because of quirky personalities. But he's one of the ones that's very well loved. He is one of the oldest. He was out there with Carterista, who was one of the oldest at the farm. And so because of that, all the women in the program know this horse from 20 years ago to today, because that's the legacy that the horse leaves. And so he not only teaches someone 20 years ago or 5 years ago or 10 years ago, like every single person that passes through the program has learned something from him.
Oh, that's a beautiful way of putting it, Tammy. Thank you. That's why I really wanted to start with one who had been there so long. But also, he is just a sweet guy. I talked to John Evans, our farm manager, just on Friday. And I said, all right, John, we're going to talk about Glorious Gambler on Monday, and what can you tell me about him? I said, you know, is he the dominant in that herd? Is he kind of a get along guy? And he said, no, he's just a good egg. He's a gentleman. He's easy. He told me not to say this. All right, I'm going to confess. John told me not to share, but I have to, you know, in the spirit of full disclosure, he is a cribber. Our little Glorious Gambler. I said, well, he has his flaws just like all of us do, right? We all have our quirks, and a Glorious Gambler is in fact a cribber, so I'm outing him for that one.
He's not left his
uncommon.
Mark throughout the farm. Tim, he's left his mark on a few boards and a few pieces of his stall, and that'll be his history and his legacy.
He will leave it behind. But that's the type of horse that we really wanted to highlight, because these are the horses that normally we get left behind. And this program does a great job in not leaving behind the people and the horses that are involved. And we're very thankful that we're a part of what you guys are doing.
Oh, well, you're doing a wonderful job, Les, letting us all share our stories. And I just love this first edition of our new segment, because they all have a story, and they don't all have the highlight reel or the black type, but they all have a story. And this darling Glorious Gambler has given so much in his career. His racing career was all of 8 months long, but his teaching career is over 20 years long. And he's still doing it right now as you and I are all speaking here this morning. I will like to point out that Glorious Gambler is one of the horses we have on our list for horse sponsorship. So if you will forgive me for doing the thing that I am here to do, to speak for the horses, if folks wanted to ever see this picture of Glorious Gambler that I'm referring to, you just go to our website and click the horse sponsorship tab. It's right there at the top of the page, and you can meet all the horses that are available for sponsorship. But Glorious Gambler is right there, so you can support him and read more about him, too.
And we'll put him up on our Facebook page and our website as well, and hopefully we get a sponsor for him. Thank you all for joining us today. I really appreciate you spending the time with us, and it has been a pleasure as always. You're three of my favorite people, so it makes my job very easy. We will be back with you again very shortly on the Thoroughbred Post, and stay safe and warm.
Thank you, Les.
Thank you,
Les. Thanks,
Les.
Thanks, Cam. Thanks, Crystal. Talk to you soon.
Oh, sounds good. Take care, everybody.